listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Do us with your knife. Running like a red disease. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Peace, family, on this King Day. I hope everything is well with you. Hope you get a chance to do today all the things that you want to do, need to do, should do, better do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you'll get it done, because that's the kind of brother and sister you is, getting it done. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program, if you are listening right at this moment, live, or whenever you have the opportunity to listen and you cannot listen live, then take the opportunity to go to the archives. Go to timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed and click on that for previously recorded programs that are dated and titled. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, all times are going to give our Eastern time, so just accordingly. Monday, Acres of Diamonds. Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Not Me, it's Sister POC with her program Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And you can call and give us your questions, comments, or concerns, or your African perspective on whatever. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. In fact, it is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. So check them out. And if you are in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. Check them out. They have all the products that they produce. And believe me, the products they produce are produced by us. So check them out. Check them out online. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org, my good brother, Bomani Tayembe. Check him out. Go online. Find out what it can take for you to be a part of that trip in May of this year, going to Ghana for 14 days. Find out what the cost is. What do you need to put down? How much do you need to pay each time so it doesn't become a strain on you, financially? And you can still go to Africa. Round trip flight from Atlanta to Accra. Obviously, they go from Atlanta to New York, from New York, maybe another place, and then Accra. I don't know if they have a direct flight from, I know they don't have a direct flight from Atlanta anymore, but transportation tours throughout Ghana, daily morning exercise meditation sessions, daily breakfast and dinner, naming ceremony, an ancestral celebration, hotel accommodation, double occupancy, business and investment conference, networking, and all kinds of stuff that you will be able to witness. If you want to check it out, check it out at AfricansForTheAfricans.org, or you can give him a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429, and check out photos on Facebook.com/Bomani. Check out videos on YouTube.com/Bomani2007 of the previous tours. Books. Better is a book, brothers and sisters, than a well-built house. Better is a book than a memorial plaque in the temple, because what is written is for eternity. And we need to read. That's the only way that we will. I mean, okay, granted, because of the technology, you don't have to read a thing. You can go to YouTube and ingest all of that information. That is true. But we got to read. And one of the places you can go to get books is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End area of Atlanta here, 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. The number to call is 404-549-8676. At the Shrine, they have furniture, clothing. They have the red, black, and green shoes. They have all kinds of good stuff for you. They also have a history class each Saturday, Know Thyself. Every Saturday is free and open to the public if you're in the Atlanta area from 1:30 to 3:30. Brother Olutunji is the instructor, does an outstanding job. Also, too, if you want that history, and like I said, you want to get more of it, they have a Black History Multimedia Library. That's right, over 5,000 video files, over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. All at your disposal. It is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. So check that out. Contact the Shrine of the Black Madonna and get that for your library. The other bookstore is Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore, Medu Netcher, Writings of the Gods, which is located very near WeBuyBlack.com. Where they have their kiosks in the Greenbrier Mall. Also, too, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Brother Jamu, Brother Kadezi. I have a problem pronouncing his first name, Kazima. You know what? I'm going to ask the brother again, and I'm going to get it right, because this is embarrassing. But Brother Jamu at Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. He also has the red, black, and green shoes. He also has an array of books, and if you can't find that book, he'll get it for you. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us. Every Thursday night, they have their broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, Us Lifting Us, at 9 p.m. 9 p.m. on Thursdays. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And you can listen to the broadcast. But more importantly, as you listen, understand what we're trying to offer our people, an alternative to the situation that we're involved in terms of economics, to pull our resources, pull our monies, and do something for ourselves. And we've done that. And we created Cafe ULU here in Atlanta in the Sylvan Mall area. That is 2036 Sylvan Road. 2036 Sylvan Road. Open Monday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. That's right, brothers and sisters, we have African coffee, because, of course, Africa is where coffee started, in Ethiopia. We have Kenya, Tanzanian, Cameroon, and other varieties. We have Central American coffees, South American coffees. We have coffee, and all the things that are sold at Cafe ULU is produced by us. Pastries, potato chips, you name it. And we have a delicious vitality drink that is created by Brother Novak Young. And that is Ambrosia. Ambrosia, the vitality drink, which all drinks contain alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, spirulina, all kinds of good stuff. And I'm going to get my brother on the tube, on the horn real soon. We're going to talk about his delicious vitality drink. Went to Baba Barudi's presentation on warriorhood, being a warrior, our men stepping up and being warriors. Outstanding presentation, a lot of good. One of the sisters at Wadada, she asked the members who were in prison, they had a handful of folks. This is a small place, but, they had to keep finding more chairs. But what did Akabin House and what did the Barudis mean to them? And many good testimonies. Well, there's going to be another presentation. This is for sisters only. And Sister Ya Barudi and her she's going to be discussing navigating the challenges of African womanhood, featuring yoga with Mama Yemi and a sister circle. That'll be Saturday, February 2nd from 5 to 9 at Wadada Health Market and Juice Bar on right across the street from the West End Mall, 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And then, of course, in March 2nd, the Akabin Institute and Akabin House's 20th anniversary celebration, and that's going to be 675 Metropolitan Parkway at Sweet Spot. And it is going to be a tremendous event. Hopefully, many people will come and support Akabin House. Like, even Saturday, I wasn't trying to grandstand, believing it's not. What I was just saying that I'm willing to give a monthly donation to Akabin Institute and Akabin House for the work they do. If you really believe in something and you can afford it, and I can't afford nothing, I ain't got no money. I really don't. But whatever I do have, I'm definitely willing to share and to help individuals and organizations that are about the education and the inspiration and the motivation of our people for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. If you're not working towards those things for our people, for African people, I may give a donation, but I'm not going to support it consistently or continuously. Because what is our end game, brothers and sisters? What do we want to see happen after all this madness? That's why I'm saying this is a very critical year for us, and we need to really analyze these 400 years. And like I said, I don't want to hear about no damn first of this and we did that. And all. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear about the fact that we've been here 400 years and our condition is no better off today in some areas than it was when we were in captivity. In fact, one could argue because of the mentality and the attitude that we have, it's even worse. So, let's get off into our African Revolutionary Daily Thoughts, the Inye Sesem. And let's get off into that. I think I'm going to read the Saturday and Sunday as well as today. Because, like I said, sometimes I look at them and I say to myself that those need to be expressed, because those are good information. And of course, the narrative that Baba Barudi gives to that quote is also equally outstanding. So, January 19th, mental bondage divorces the individual from the knowledge inherent in his being that should be used to further his evolution. One in mental slavery looks to another for guidance instead of within. Richard King. Break your mental bondage. Turn off the idiot box. Come out of the mall. Study our history. Explain all our history to those within earshot. Take a potential Asafu with you to sit at the Jegna's feet. Asafu is a warrior. A Jegna is what we used to call a mentor, a person who gives instructions. We shouldn't use the word mentor because that comes out of the Greek. And if you know the story of who mentor was and how, you go do the research, okay? You go do the research of mentor. So we need to call them a Jegna. And I said on a program I was listening to, and I was talking about a good brother of mine, I mentioned that he was a good mentor. And I was like, damn. As soon as I heard it, I was like, I felt a little something, you know? So Jegna is what the word that should be used. Start a month-long book drive for an African-centered school in your community. Start an African-centered school. Learn an African language. Find an incarcerated African to write to about his or her vision and African mission. Watch a colony of ants work together. Develop a family mission statement. Learn to sew and cook without machines. Organize for the protection of a warrior elder. Be grateful for being given such an enormous responsibility. Study a survival manual. Speak with your ancestors. Volunteer an hour a week with a family homeschooling their children. Pay off credit cards and don't again use them or replace them. Learn a manual skill that would be beneficial to our community. Take up martial arts. Build an independent business. Speak to the wind about the assistance we need for our work. Start a book or journal that will help transform menticide into consciousness. Plant the seeds of your favorite vegetable. Camp out for the weekend. Break from your bondage and invite someone to come with you. Affirm. I look inside African wisdom for guidance. Affirm. I look inside African wisdom for guidance. January 20th. It is quite easy to shout slogans, to sign manifestos, but it is quite different matter to build, manage, command, spend days and nights seeking the solution to problems. Patrice Lumumba. If you are advised too hard, thinkless, selfless work, you are reading the wrong book. So if you're adverse to hard, thankless, selfless work, you are reading the wrong book. You see, what we have here are words whose only purpose is the work of nation building. If this could be done without an utterance, then would be done. As Patrice Lumumba, an incomparable man who was assassinated by the unconscionable allies and their emasculated, power-hungry pets for leading his viciously colonized people to the brink of independence, said, "It is one thing to shout, write, and protest, and quite another to gather the courage and make the time to do whatever it is actually necessary to enforce truth, justice, righteousness, and order." This is the challenge in this day of conversation, debate, and argument, where we have been convinced that being seen is far more important than being so involved in your work, and that you don't have the time or inclination to look around to see who is in awe, where words without actions are taken as sufficient to change our reality into an African one. This is not the work of weak, easily distracted, needy, selfish individuals. This is the work of warriors. Affirm, I am not adverse to hard, often thankless, selfless work. Affirm, I am not adverse to hard, often thankless, selfish work. January 21st. If you must bleed, let it come all at once. Rather die free man than live to be slaves. Henry Highland Garnett. A Jegna by the name of Camus Kabong, he just made his transition family. Brother just made his. No, that was Kobe Kabong. I apologize. Camus Kabong encapsulate the slow, systematic death many Africans who have fully internalized the slave mentality commit against themselves in the term subtle suicide. Simply put, subtle or durational suicide is a process where severely oppressed individuals, too afraid of death, to immediately end their own lives or those of their oppressors, resort to engaging in practices which are destructive to their minds and body and destined to eventually kill themselves. Whether consciously or not, they develop and nurture habits and addictions such as drugs and alcohol, excessive, unsafe, and confused sex, gluttonous diets and salt and sugar and idleness that allows their brain and their body to bloat, and from that doing little more than watching the idiot box while laid out on the couch. With time, any and all of these self-administrated poisons will give those ignorance of self or afraid of being who they are, what they want, a permanent way out of their responsibilities to their people and out of this insanity. Suicide, subtle or otherwise, is not an option for warriors. For those fully conscious of being at war and cognizant of their responsibilities to their people suffering in it, it is an unacceptable, cowardly act committed not against oneself, but against our people. Affirm, I live as a warrior and I will die as a warrior. Affirm, I live as a warrior and I will die as a warrior. The Yinsei Seisim. Today is Monday, and today is Dr. King's holiday. Today is Dr. King Day. So, we want to hear a little Stevie Wonder. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Today is King Day. Across this country, it is a celebrated holiday. The third Monday of January is designated as King Day. The federal government has made Dr. King's birthday a national holiday. I remember back in the early 80s when we were, in fact, that's when this song came out, in the early 80s. And we were gathering signatures across the country to petition to this government to make his birthday a national holiday. Now, in retrospect, for me, I wouldn't do it. No way I would do it. I wouldn't. That's just like anything tied to this government, especially somebody who was a fighter. I would not want them to be. Like, just like I'm so adamant about Harriet Tubman, Sister Amenthia, having her on the $20 bill. In fact, even more egregious as far as I'm concerned is that on the $20 bill, you're going to have her on it and you're still going to keep Andrew Jackson on it. So, you know, I'm just no. It's just like when Trump, now I don't know if he did it because of his ignorance and stupidity, is a narcissistic fool, but somebody had it set up when he had those native indigenous people who did the talk, the ones who were using the coded language, the code. There's a name for them too, but it's cold. Well, anyway, they were invited to the White House, these older indigenous brothers, Native Americans. And the podium was right under a picture of Andrew Jackson. And the history of Andrew Jackson, as far as indigenous people are concerned, is ugly. He was very murderous. Look what he did in Central and South Florida. And he's the one that began to murder those indigenous people along with us and many of us who came down here and to be part of what is now called the Seminoles and put them on the Trail of Tears. So having them invite them in with a picture. Now, once again, I don't know if Trump was aware of it. I know that those who handled that situation were aware of it, and that's what they wanted to do. You know. But today, across this country, and this past weekend, Friday, and Sunday, of course, there were King sales, but there were programs, you know, essay programs, cultural programs. For the birth date of Dr. King, I know a friend of mine in Milwaukee, Sister Jeanette Herrera, she's having her King program today. And where there's drumming and vendors and presentations and a scholarship given out and a keynote speaker. I'm not sure who it is this year. in Milwaukee. And, of course, the activities here are serious. And, of course, the NBA has games all day to honor Dr. King. They have a game here, always have a game here in Atlanta, and they have a game in Memphis, the team in Memphis, to honor Dr. King. Dr. King's legacy, I'm going to read from Wikipedia. They have an extensive piece in Wikipedia, of course, on history of individuals, and of course King would definitely be that. And in fact, the man, you'll be scrolling down or up for days trying to, you know, deal with all of the things that Dr. King was involved in. What's interesting, there is a statue of Booker T. Washington where he is taking the cloak off of a brother who was a captive, who was enslaved, basically opening his eyes and exposing him. Like I said, oh man, this thing for Dr. King is extensive. I love it. And in in Westminster Abbey in England, there's a statue of Dr. King in the west entrance of Westminster Abbey. And it was installed there in 1998 with the same thing, not just the cloak, but you see Dr. King in his robe and as a minister with his hand out and making a point, and you see the young brother at his feet, just like the statue of Booker T. Washington. You know, because around the globe, King was recognized. But we have to understand that King, in him coming up, and I know his birthday was the 15th and Muhammad Ali's is the 17th, those two individuals were vilified. They hated them. This country hated them. The press hated them. Both of them. But of course, they were glorified in their death or in their silence. Because when they were living, has this country labeled Dr. King public enemy number one. And of course, they hated Muhammad Ali, and I maintain that when he went to the Mayo Clinic for health reasons that because you don't automatically, as a boxer, there's not a lot of boxers that get a Parkinson's disease. Let's be real. You're punch drunk because of your head being rattled and so forth. But he was silenced. That's what I maintain. Well, you know, I'm a big on conspiracies. You damn right I am. Because I don't trust anything that this government says, and I don't trust anything that this government does. They are liars, and the truth ain't in them. They will do any and everything they have to do to maintain and sustain the privilege that they created for themselves at the expense of all humanity, at the expense of the world. So, Dr. King's legacy, King's main legacy, was to secure progress on civil rights in the U.S. Just days after his assassination, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 68, Title 8 of the Act, commonly known as the Fair Housing Act. And see, what's interesting about all of this is that even to this day, 50 years later, these issues and these problems persist. Because one thing that when you begin to work with our people and you begin to open your heart and open your mind, you begin to read and comprehend and understand our situation, then you will begin to understand that these Caucasians have never and will never mean us no good. Which prohibited discrimination in housing and related transactions on the basis of race, religion, and national origins. Later expanded to include sex, family status, and disability. This legislation was seen as a tribute to Dr. King's struggle in the final years to combat residential discrimination in the U.S. Internationally, King's legacy included influences on black consciousness movements and civil rights movements in South Africa. King's work was cited by and served as an inspiration for South African leader Albert Tule, who fought for racial justice in this country and was later awarded the Nobel Prize. Dr. King was awarded the Nobel Prize and one of the youngest persons to get that Nobel Prize for his work on nonviolent social change. The day following King's assassination, school teacher Jane Elliott conducted her first Blue Eye, Brown Eyes exercises with her class of elementary school students in Riceville, Iowa. Her purpose was to help them understand King's death as related to racism, something they little understood as they lived in a predominantly white community. And she has been doing that, and you've probably seen her on YouTube. You've seen her on the Phil Donahue show, Oprah's show, and so forth, Jane Elliott. And she was very confrontational to Caucasians because she understood that Caucasians don't give a damn about it. But when you confront them with what they have done and what they're doing, they didn't like it. They didn't like the treatment that they were getting. They didn't like to be segregated. They didn't like to be treated as less than, because they've been coming up for so many hundreds of years since they came out of that dark age, that medieval age, with the attitude that they were superior, that they have a divine right, that God, their God, gave them the divine right to go around and take people's stuff in the name of and subjugate them, and or even to eliminate them. So when she did these exercises, many people were crying, upset, cussing her out and so forth, and she would put them out the room. You know, Reverend Charles King was doing the same kind of exercises. Very imposing man. I never forget the Phil Donahue episode when he was on there confronting these Caucasians. But that's the thing, that you're trying to get a people to understand morality when they are amoral. They don't give a damn. Try as hard as you like. They don't give a damn. King has become a national icon in the history of American liberalism and American progressivism. King also influenced Irish politician and activist John Hume. Hume, the former leader of the Social Democratic and Labor Party, cited King's legacy as quintessential to the Northern Irish civil rights movement and the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, calling him one of my greatest heroes of the century. King's wife, Coretta Scott King, followed in her husband's footsteps with activism in matters of social justice and civil rights until her death. When she died, Coretta Scott King died in 2006. The same year that King was assassinated, she established the King Center for Social Nonviolent Social Change here in Atlanta, dedicated to preserving his legacy and the work of champion nonviolent conflict resolution and tolerance worldwide. Their son, Dexter King, serves as the center's chairman. I don't know if that's the case anymore, because the federal government, the Parks Department, the federal government runs the King Center. The federal government runs King's home, right there off of on Auburn Street and all that area there. The federal government runs that. The King family does not run that, you know. Daughter Yolanda King, who died in 07, was a motivational speaker, author, and founder of High Ground Productions, in organizing, specializing in diversity training. Died too soon. Yolanda King. And if anyone, you want to check out something she did that was really nice, there's a little small vignette from a short story that Dr. John Henry Clark penned, which is The Child Who Painted Christ Black. The Child Who Painted Christ Black was Wesley Snipes. In fact, she plays the mother of the child who painted Christ black. Wesley Snipes is the teacher. is a very good piece. In fact, you could probably catch it. Go to YouTube. Half-hour piece. It's a half-hour piece. The child painter is Christ Black. And she's in that. Even when King family members disagree about his religion and political views about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, King's widow, Claretta Scott King, publicly stated that she believed her husband would have been supportive of gay rights. However, his youngest daughter, Bernice King, has said publicly that he would have been opposed to gay marriage. On February 4th, 1968, at the Ebenezer Church, in speaking about how he wished to be remembered after his death, King stated, and I know you know the speech, I would like somebody to mention on that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I like for somebody to say that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to love somebody. I want you to say that day that I tried to be right on the war question. I want you to be able to say that day that I tried to feed the hungry. I want you to be able to say that day that I tried in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say that on that day that I tried in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to be able to say that day that I loved and served humanity. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness. And all of the other shallow things will not matter. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have the fine and luxurious things of life to leave behind. But I just want to leave a committed life behind. And that's what he did. He left a committed life behind. And so on this day that we celebrate Dr. King, and he definitely deserves to be celebrated, but then so does other heroes. Now, of course, he is a national, an American national figure. Because why? He was the conscience of this country. That's right. He was the political conscience of this country. He kept holding up to America its hypocrisy, its contradictions. He kept holding up to America how hypocritical this society is. And because of that, and, you know, because when he was talking about integrating lunch counters and the buses and the theaters, restaurants and so forth, you know, we can deal, the cracker said, we can deal with the public accommodations, you know. We'll give lip service to that. But when you talk about, see, Dr. King said there were three evils in this country: racism, militarism, and capitalism. And those three evils have never been dealt with even to this day. The evil of racism. There's only one form of racism in the world, and that is European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known to many of us as white supremacy. That's why when we talk about the white supremacist, it is not some khaki-wearing, tiki-torch-carrying cracker with slogans, "You Jews will not replace us, we are this and that, all this bull." No. That's not it. They're not white supremacists. The white supremacist is those who set all this up. The white supremacist is what the world looks like today in Australia, in South America, Central America, in the Caribbean, in this country, in Canada. That's the white supremacist. Those who believe that Europeans, Caucasians, have a divine right to rule over everybody, over this whole planet. That's the white supremacist. It is not some skinhead, neo-Nazi. No, it's the president. It's Congress, the Senate, the judiciary, the governor, the state house, the mayor, Caucasian men and women and children who believe that by divine right, that's the white supremacist. And there was nothing that Dr. King could do. King told Harold Belafonte, I believe, as his end was approaching, that I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. I'm trying to redirect the deck chairs on the Titanic. Instead of getting off, instead of getting out, I'm trying to reform. I'm trying to change. And none of that could happen. It hasn't happened. It's not happening. And it ain't going to happen. But we keep holding out hope. We'll have all these programs today where people will talk all these glowing things about Dr. King and his message and his person, all this bullshit. It just consistently giving lip service. And yet another year and another year. And basically things aren't any better. And in fact, as far as I'm concerned, they're worse. Because of the serious division within African people. With a small group of us having wealth at the expense of the majority of us. I use the 100%. There's 100% of us. 40 of that 100 are at, now I've been saying that, right? And now it is clear. Now you should be able to really see what I'm saying because of this government shutdown. You should be very clear. Because, I mean, once again, brothers and sisters, let me say this to you. I don't say stuff to be mean. I say things so we can change, so we can change. I say things, and it's not my opinion. This is not my opinion. In order for me to do what I do on this program, I read. I research. I'm not the best. I'm not the best reader. I'm not the best researcher. There's no doubt about that. But I do this from my heart. From my mind, from my soul, for our ancestors, for our future. So, when 100%, 40% of us are at or below poverty. You can see that. The next 40% are 2 to 3 paychecks away to being at or below poverty. Look what's happening with all those people who are who work for the federal government, which, of course, a lot of us work for the federal government. A lot of us work for government because why? We could probably get a public works job more so than we can access the private sector, particularly now since affirmative action has ended. In the private sector, they can hire who in the hell they want and more than likely may not be challenged. So they can hire some dumbass cracker over you because those statistics that bear that out, those statistics are there for you to see that Caucasians with a high school diploma make more money than a black person with a college degree. So now that's 80% of us. And those 40% who are at or below poverty, and that 40% who are 2 to 3 paychecks away from joining those brothers and sisters who are at or below poverty, you're seeing it happen right now. You're seeing it happen. Then there's 20% of us. 10 of the 20% are doing okay. I can throw myself in there. I'm just being real. I don't have no money, but I have a pension. I worked 31 years for Milwaukee Fire Department. Some other things that I've done. So I'm in a position, I don't have any money, but I'm in a position that if the city of Milwaukee failed and economically it was, you know, I would be in trouble. That's like everybody else. I'll be joining all those other brothers and sisters. And there's a number of us in the same way. There are some of us in that 10% of the 20, they're still pretty sheltered. They probably had a good savings program that they can get off into. And they put away six figures. Some maybe even have a seven figure piece. Put it away. That's great. So that's the 10% of the 20 who are doing well. They're doing well. You know, they live in gated communities, cul-de-sacs, subdivisions, and so forth. They're doing well. Then there's the other 10% who are doing exceedingly well. They are entertainers, sports figures, actors, songwriters, songstress, whatever. They're doing exceedingly well. Tyler Perry, Oprah Winfrey, Michael Jordan. Some of them can even be said to be in that 1%. This morning they said 25 families in that 1% have more wealth in the world than the bottom 50% of people in the world. In the world. Not in this country, in the world. Man, that's sad. That's sad. So that's the 100% that we deal with. And that's where we are today. So when we talk about Dr. King and celebrate his life, and we should, but we always must keep it in the context of who Dr. King was and what he was about. No, he was not Afrocentric. No, he was not about sovereignty. Dr. King believed that because he was a Christian, that the Christian love and the belief in God and Jesus, that those who believe that same tenets would also have a heart for all those who are Christian, no matter what color they were, no matter what color they were, and no matter what country they were from. But yet, that's not the world. The world is ruled by evil Caucasian people who are selfish and greedy, and they don't want to share. So those three evils that Dr. King talked about, racism, militarism, and capitalism, will be here because that is their foundation. That's what keeps them in this position. So when he talked about the economic situation and the poor, he had to go. When he talked about ending the Vietnam War, because in militarism, that's how the economy works. I'll never forget, I read an article, and the article was about a search for peace. And this general said, no. We can't afford peace. There should be no such thing as peace on the planet. We have to maintain this militaristic position because it is about economics. Why do you think that the largest part of the economic pie or the expenditures or the budget is military? That's ridiculous, isn't it? Of course it is. But you can see that the military arm of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is the United Snakes of America. They are the military arm. They're all around the damn globe. And they will strike your ass in an instant. Whew. Yeah, capitalism, militarism, and racism, the three evils. We appreciate Dr. King. We appreciate all he's done. We'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Long live the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Following Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 to 10. On Friday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 8 p.m. And then on Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I tell you, brothers and sisters, once again, I don't give you my opinion on this stuff. I really don't, because it is seriously profane. And if anybody who knows me, I cuss. And so if I gave you my opinion, what I think about what Caucasians have done to us, I couldn't give you a perspective that you could understand, because I'll be like all over and up and down on the, yeah. So, but that be it as it may, it is what it is. And just like Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture said, Dr. King is trying to use a moral persuasion on a people who are amoral. They don't give a damn. Dr. King tried. And for his efforts, he was murdered by this government, by this system. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I don't give a damn about James Earl Ray or the subsequent trials or any other thing like that. I don't care about the Nation of Islam and is allegedly being involved in the death of El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. I believe he was murdered by this government. To me, anybody who does something for the good of African people and trying to change their minds, this government will take them out. This government will discredit them, will put them on Front Street, or they will eliminate them. Once again, there is no doubt about it that I put no faith at all in Caucasians, and they will do any and everything they have to do to maintain and sustain the position that they have. And that is all about them. We have a caller, 447.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to you, Brother Oshi. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Brother Paul. How are you this day?
Well, I'm glad that you can hear me loud and clear. And the mere fact that you can hear me, I'm actually driving home from a job.
Oh, okay.
I'm on the road. And, I was thinking to myself, what a beautiful time it is when I can just contact you. I can tune into your great show and I can listen to you and I can give you a bit of input and, hopefully influence your mind and how great we are as a people. And with this use of technology and that platform that you're on, we can help to influence and touch the world, because as you were speaking, let me first say thank you for Dr. Martin Luther King for doing his part. My grandmother always says, don't talk bad of the dead.
Okay.
As big as you cross it. But I won't speak bad of the dead. I'll just say that he done his thing, and it's now time for us to do our thing.
That's right.
Do our part in this scheme of things, yeah? So every time I phone in and I listen to your great show, your great wisdom, I always feel a sense of pride. I feel a sense of we are alive, yeah? And once I know that I'm alive, I can do better. And better I must do, and better we must do. We're going to win this thing, Brother OG.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter what this devil does, we will win this thing. So, sometimes I just want to phone in just to acknowledge that despite the distance between you and I can still be influenced by your wisdom, and with that influence, I can use my intellect and intelligence to make things happen. Yeah, and we must do that. And the only thing I will request, Brother Oshie, is that we remember that we are people of the world, and it's now time to use this technology to influence and touch the world so that we can bring back home whatever we need to bring back home. That's what I want to say to you today, Brother Oshie.
I appreciate that, and I agree wholeheartedly with you in that statement, because we are a people of the world, and what I'm desperately trying to do is awaken African people on the continent, throughout the diaspora, wherever we are. Awaken African people. Let's be one Africa. There is no doubt about it. If we have that collective mindset, there is no doubt about what we can do. There is nothing that we could not do if we had that collective mindset. And so that's what it's all about.
Well, the thing is, Brother Oshi, is many are called, but the few, many are chosen, but the few, sorry, many are called, but the few chosen, yeah? Yes, so many are called, but the few chosen. So you run a program which deals with the mind, and it's my favorite program of all time. It is my favorite program of all time, because when you talk about dealing with the mind, I know that solution, Brother Oshi.
Yes.
But what I think we've got to recognize, not everybody understands that solution.
No, they don't. No, they don't. And the reason why they don't understand it, Brother Paul, is because their minds have been manipulated. So they don't understand. They can't get that, you know, they can't step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon them to look at it for what it
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. So then, you see, the burden, I recognize that the burden falls on us. Our job is to absolutely re-educate them, deprogram them, de-brainwash them, mentally take off the shackles off their brain. And that is a mountain of a task.
It is.
But as long as platforms like this, with Brother Elliot and others, Brother Richard, and all the others who contribute to this wonderful platform, and others, as long as we keep putting out the word sound power and the sound bite, keep doing the great work, and keep knowing that we're doing the right thing, not just believing in it, knowing that we're doing it and executing our work, Brother Oshie. You see, we send out a frequency. And there's one thing which I want you to recognize here, which I think people don't get. There's something called the 101 monkey theory. Have you ever heard of that?
Not sure. Go ahead.
What it is when consciousness reaches critical mass, whatever critical mass means, the number, it's a digital number. So once it gets to a number in terms of consciousness, say, for instance, 100, once it goes past 100, 101, consciousness spreads. It does it telepathy. And I've seen the evidence, and I know it does work. It's not a finest hocus pocus. It's true. Because consciousness doesn't reside in the mind alone. It resides in the ether. It's connected to the whole.
Okay.
Once consciousness reaches over. So people like me and you must never give up. Keep pushing that message out there into the ether. Let your words be your sound, and your sound encourage the power to create thought and imagination and to take this brainwashing and reprogram these individuals. So this is our job. So we've got to recognize that at this time, right now, as we're doing it, you know, these people are moving to center it and block it and change up the whole way things are going, because they didn't expect the internet to be used like this.
Yeah.
To spread a message and re-educate people.
Yes.
So we've got to recognize that as well. So it's a great and fabulous work you're doing. Absolutely on point. And, I'm speaking to you now. I'm driving home. I'm speaking to you right across the ocean. If we established that I could sell something to you over the internet, something that you're interested in, that's an exchange, that's a trade. So we can trade with anybody around the world, and we've got to encourage that. We've got to use these platforms to encourage trade every way around the world. We've got to build on it. We've got to use it for trade, to build networking, to hub each other, webinars, to educate, reprogram. You know, we can educate children right from this internet.
So that's right.
We have to exploit it to its maximum. That's our task. And everybody listening to it can take part in it.
That's right.
Use this technology to exploit it to the maximum. And that's what I'm pointing out there. I have an IT background. So, you know, that's 2019. That's what I'm going to be pushing. I'm going to use my knowledge of this thing to the maximum. I'm going to use it like a tool and exploit it to its maximum. That's what we need to do.
I say.
So therefore, we can catch all our people everywhere, you know. And that's it. Because, you know, if you look at our adversaries, they don't stick to one hood. They don't stick to one place. They go all around the world and exploit it and bring whatever they can back home to them.
That's right.
We must go all around and bring our people together. So, you know, like I said, I just phoned in to acknowledge the great work you've done. I'm listening to you, and you're influencing me. You're influencing me to make this call, and that's the power of this communication. So, Brother Ocean, keep up the good work, and, you know, just keep it firing, and I can't wait till Wednesday to tune into the Mind program, because that's my favorite program of all time.
I hear you, Brother Paul. Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you, too. Let's stay strong. Let's stay straight ahead. Continue to help our people, man. Bless you. Peace to you.
Absolutely. You will never give in. Thank
never.
You.
Never. All right. That's my good brother, Brother Paul, from across the pond. And it's a pleasure that he listens and he has turned some others on to this program, to this particular platform here on Time for an Awakening. And it's fantastic. And I agree with him. We must use this platform. I will do the best that I can. I will stay on this till I expire. My whole objective is to change the minds of our people. It is about the minds. That's where we end our program with that Stephen Biko quote. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. I'm going to talk about culture. I know that we have a culture here in America as American Africans, like other Africans have wherever they are in the diaspora and even on the continent, of different ways of doing things and so forth and so on. And I know here in America, you know, there has been a lot of cultural appropriation by the dominant culture. There's been those of us who could not get into the dominant culture and created subcultures. I know that there are some things that have been created that are talked about as being part of the black culture that are sometimes very detrimental to us as a people. But the reality of it is we have a culture. And what I would hope that we would embrace is a positive thing of African culture. And we need to establish that and reestablish that in terms, we need to establish it and reestablish it. And by that, I mean, is that what is good? We take what is good. We take what is good from whatever we learned, what is best for us as a people, as a collective people, and we discard all the other nonsense. My good friend and brother, Dr. Conrad Worrell, the president or the chairman emeritus of the National Black United Front, wrote an article last week in the Chicago Crusader. We must never surrender our culture. We must never surrender our culture. Brother Conrad, good friend of mine, excellent brother, love him. Dr. Conrad Worrell, he writes, our late great ancestor, Dr. Asa G. Hilliard's book, The Maroon Within Us, once again reminds us of a major problem that we have as African people in America and really globally. Dr. Hilliard described this problem as a cultural surrender. In explaining the problem, Dr. Asa Hilliard wrote, American Africans remain one of the very few groups in the United States who do not honor their own cultural traditions, sometimes even when they are honored by others, because we've been trained to ignore them. We've been trained to be ashamed of them. We've been trained to hate them. Continuing on this point, Dr. Hilliard states that if there is a major illness among American African people, it is that we increasingly honor and utilize our culture less. All great nations and people do the opposite. They increasingly honor and utilize their culture. We increasingly honor and utilize our culture. Dr. Hilliard further explains, culture surrender is more than a matter of rejecting one's father and mother's culture. It means that one accepts a new definition as a person. The culturally dependent person is a mere spectator, a receptacle for the creativeness of others. To demand freedom from slavery only to use that freedom to commit oneself to a voluntary cultural servitude is to lose the chance to be human. The erosion of many of our African cultural traditions and foundations are most evident in our family and community life. Far too many American African people are getting away from the essence of family life. The cultural tradition of African family life is that of extended family that centers itself on the rearing of children and caring for elders. Now, let me break away, and as I'll do in reading this piece that my good friend, Dr. Conrad Worrell wrote, is, and he's out of Chicago. Very good brother. Look him up. Please do. Is that because of the imposition of a European culture on us, that our culture was, we were made to be ashamed to be African. So many of our people, even way back coming out of enslavement, if they looked more European, if they act more European, if they dress more European, if they lived in an area outside of the confines of what the European imposed on us, they felt better. And many of us wanted to be like them. And so many people left out of the South, of course, because of the terror of being lynched, of being murdered, of being having your possessions taken or being put into servitude, or the new slavery that happened after the old one, convict leasing. Just because you were standing around putting you in prison and then jobbing you out to a company to build railroads or mine and so forth, and you were stuck there to almost, literally you were stuck there till you died because you couldn't pay supposedly what you had taken from the commissary, and they kept you in there. Family life is the base for which people maintain their cultural traditions, traditions that are important to the survival of a people. The way we raise our children in the context of extended family for African people was always connected to the overall development of the larger community. Now, to some extent, Brother Conrad is correct, but I maintain that we've always had a fractured family life because family is the foundation, and the European did not want the Caucasian, the American did not want us to have solid, good family life. Dr. Hilliard writes, there has always been Africans in America who have been both physically and mentally free. We have also had far too many of those who have yielded their bodies and worse, their souls to people and the system whose purpose was to exploit and take all and give nothing. In this context, Dr. Hilliard provides several reasons why this devastating trend of cultural surrender is taking place. He says, we have tended to accept certain false dichotomies, such as the following. We have tended to equate sophisticated technology with culture, believing that such technology is exclusively European, and to affirm African culture is to reject technology. We were the first people on the planet. People came to sit at the feet of African people to learn how to run societies. We were the first people to develop architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it. We were the first people. So those things were technical. I know when we think about technology today, we're thinking about, you know, the sciences, we're thinking about computers, we're thinking about all of those things. But those things are just something that will help in the effort to establish who we are culturally and affirm who we are culturally a lot better. Number two, we have tended to equate modern with technology and to value modern as if it were cultural progress. At the same time, we have seen the affirmation of African culture as a matter of regression. Further, we have seen African culture as stagnant rather than dynamic and adaptive. Because number one, that's what happened when you have been subjugated the way we have. On the continent through colonialism and imperialism and throughout the diaspora because of captivity, because of enslavement. We don't have the access. We didn't have the ability. We could not compete because the reality is if all things being equal, you can see if all things being equal from a physical sense, we kick butt. We kick ass. We also could kick ass in an intellectual sense if all things were equal, if we didn't not have these impediments, if Europeans, because they're so selfish and so damn greedy, they don't want to compete. They believe that they are superior. They believe that they should have the divine right to rule over others. Number three. We have tended to equate European culture with wealth and African culture with poverty because that's what you see. The wealth of Europe, of all those countries in Europe, all of them, is because of the exploitation of Africa and Africans. All of them. We help build their wealth. We help build England, France, Spain, Portugal, Germany, the northern, the Scandinavian countries of Switzerland and Finland and Sweden, all that bull. We helped build all of that. And then they came into Africa and colonized it. Belgium, the little tiny country of Belgium. They're rich. Those countries are well sustained. Now, the problem that they have is because they're Caucasian and they ain't birthing. They have an issue of population. That's why they didn't mind the immigrants into Europe. There was a problem, of course, but they needed that because just like Germany. Germany, if you know Germany, or Germans, who happen to be the most adamant and most racist of the Europeans, why would they accept all these immigrants? Because they need somebody to work. Their population is old. Even though they're Muslims, and they may allow them to continue to be Muslims, but they'll control that. They'll control that. Poverty. Africa is the richest planet on the continent, more mineral wealth than any other place on the planet, but yet it's impoverished. The infrastructure is damn near non-existent. I'm going to tell you, if it was me and I had the ability, I'd pimp slap every damn one of those so-called leaders in Africa and kick their ass out and put in place. I don't care about tribe. Let's get off this tribalism. That's a problem. We need African statesmen, men and women, who understand that what's most important is for Africa to be independent, to be self-determining, to be liberated, and to be sovereign as a nation, as a continent. And each of those countries have the same thing. The borders that you see when you look at a political map of Africa, we didn't draw those. And if we want to, or we feel we need to, we'll redraw them. We make sure that those who are of a different dialects and different tribes understand we are one Africa. That's why they had to get rid of Jop. That's why they had to get rid of Kwame Nkrumah. That's why they had to get rid of Patrice Lumumba, Idi Amin Dada, and any other African who talked about African sovereignty, who talked about one Africa, who talked about the United States of Africa. No damn, and because I got a call here. 602, good afternoon.
Good morning, brother. What's you? Hello?
How you doing, Brother Marcus? Go ahead.
I'm great, good brother.
Good.
You know, when you talk about leaders, them Negroes ain't leaders, brother. Them is bootlickers and gatekeepers. That's what the hell they are.
Yeah?
They're the ones standing in the way of progress.
That's right.
You see? They're the way, but you see, you see what's happening on the continent right now? There's unrest in Zimbabwe. There's unrest in the Sudan, in Guinea. Other places in Africa, because the youth in Africa getting tired of the foolishness.
That's right.
They're getting tired of foolishness. And these damn gatekeepers, we need to put their ass on the wall.
That's right.
I'm telling you.
That's right.
Sick and tired of
I am. I swear. It needs to stop, right? It needs to stop yesterday, but let's stop today. Hell, if we got to stop it tomorrow, let's do so. But damn it, it has to stop. This foolishness has to stop.
It has to stop, my brother. And I think the youth in Africa, those 700 million youth that's under 30 are beginning to realize, look, we better do something because if we let these people stay in power, they're going to kill us.
That's right.
So,
we will be exterminated.
Yes.
We will be exterminated. Just like, Brother Marcus, it's just like here. Here in this country, our population is stagnant. It's stagnant. Yep. It hasn't grown, which is ironic because we're a young population. I understand why the Caucasians, because they're old. and there's an issue with their birthing. They have a problem. But that's not us. But our problem is mass incarceration, addiction, homosexuality, and other issues that we're having, that our population is stagnant. We're experiencing zero population growth.
And that's in our strange. Yes, that's strange as fuck, because we are people, we multiply, you know, so you're right. You're right, mm-hmm. Brother Oshie. But, you know, I would say, these people, I don't call them leaders.
No,
I
the misleadership. That's right.
Yes, they know, yeah, they know damn leaders.
No.
They're some boot-licking Uncle Tom.
That's right.
Stephen Fetchit.
They're neo.
Negroes.
That's right. They're neo-colonialists. They're exactly. White people in blackface.
Exactly.
They're white people in that's blackface.
That's why this morning I was talking up my boat. They said Kamala Harris running and people getting excited. Oh, Kamala Harris. I said, look at these people here. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, all them other Negroes. I don't give a damn. In fact, you know, to me, if you're a real strong African leader, you're trying to talk about running for the United States, then there's something wrong with you. If you're talking about being president of this damn place, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, well, she married to a Jew, so we know exactly where she's coming from. If she married to Kabibel, we know what the hell is going on. Anyway, brother, I watch it.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, brother Marcus. Thank you for listening and always contributing, man. Appreciate you.
All right, brother.
Peace, thank my you. Brother. Number four, we have tended to associate education with the actual acquiescence of all cultural norms of Europeans, and to find it hard to conceive of education and an educated person who lived the African culture. I'm going to read that one again because I'm going to want you to understand that. Because we have associated education with the acquisition of all the cultural forms of Europeans, and we find it hard to conceive of an educated person who lived African culture. We're hard because we think to truly be educated is to be educated in the institutions of Europeans. Still today, on the Facebook, give this brother a hand who did great by passing all of the SATs, the top score of this. Brothers and sisters, understand something. Has the first humans on the planet, that greatness is within us. Sometimes, no matter how oppressed and suppressed it may be, but it is within us. That shouldn't be no serious accomplishment we need to have a party about. No. What we need is brothers and sisters who understand that education for us is education for liberation. Education for sovereignty. That's the education that we need. We need to develop to educate warriors, men and women, who will go out here fearlessly and on behalf of our people, our young people, our adults, and our elders, and fight for us to be free and self-determining. That's the education we need. If you're giving a young brother or sister some education and hope that they get it and they do well so they can go beg a cracker for a job. No. The education that we need, brothers and sisters, is education that instills in us the knowledge of self, the confidence of who we are historically and culturally, and to fight for that. And to help other brothers and sisters understand that. Number five, we have tended to equate self-affirmation with the hatred of others. I don't hate anybody. I love humanity. But let me tell you what I do hate. I hate a system that Europeans have created, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. Because it has, this was a word that was in our preamble of the Black Firefighters, deleterious. It has deleterious effects on us globally. We have no friends. Everywhere we are, look at this present day. At this very moment, at this very day and time, we have no friends. We are dogged out everywhere, even on the continent. We're dogged out in North Africa. One of the best places and one of the best leaders for Africa and for Africans was Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were the leaders in having him murdered, having him killed. And look at the country today. They are selling, they are castrating brothers to sell them to Arab countries, castrating them. There are brothers and sisters tied up and enchained to be sold. Look at Central Africa. Look at East and West and South Africa. We have so much to do, brothers and sisters. So when I affirm, when I read those Inyesesims and Brother Baba Barudi's narrative after the quotes of these famous brothers and sisters, ancestors, great wisdom, I read them sincerely and dedicatedly. I'm affirming, and that's not a hatred for others. I want to make sure that we love ourselves, because by loving ourselves, not meaning that we hate anybody else, but we've been trained to hate ourselves. We've been trained to hate our hair, trained to hate our nose, trained to hate our skin. That we look at ourselves with such disdain and disgust and a belief that we cannot work together. Number six, we have tended to equate religion with the particular forms of European interpretations of Christianity and have not seen our people as religious or spiritual. Now, this is a deep one, because I know there are many of us who believe in liberation theology, and they take the Christian religion and they shape it and fashion it in our image and interests. You know, they're liberation theologists. I understand that. But the bottom line to me is, and I know there are people, let's be real, they look at Christianity through a European vision. They look at Christianity the way, you know, the way that they envision it to be and how it could work for us. And it can't. I'm sorry. It can't. The religions that we as African people must observe are religions that are African. And I don't want to go through the whole thing about Christianity starting in Ethiopia and so forth. You know, let's be real. The people who dominate and control Catholicism, control Christianity, all other forms, control and dominate Judaism, they're European, they're Caucasian, and they have shaped and fashioned it in their image and interest and imposed it. Not Judaism. They don't impose Judaism. Judaism is a select group for the Europeans, because they're the ones who control Christianity. That's right, I said it. The Jews control Christianity. The Jews control damn near everything. You know, we got a caller. Let me take this caller. Good afternoon, caller 804. Good afternoon, 804.
Yes, greetings, Brother Oshie.
Good. Greetings. How you doing, dear brother?
Yes, I'm doing good. And I just want to praise you, brother. You know, you're doing some powerful work. You've said some powerful things all throughout the show today. And I also want to, you're a rare brother, you know, of the warriors that actually realize the greatness of the daily revolutionary thoughts.
Yes.
And I just want to express, bro, It pains me, because I read it every day myself.
Right on.
And I try to tell brothers and sisters that if you were to talk about what are the greatest books that we must read, and they come up with, you know, hundreds of them, or thousands maybe.
Yes.
But if we read all of these books that people would name off one at a time and then put it down and go to another one, but the difference it would make in our mindset if every day we read some daily revolutionary thoughts that's coming from Africans, this African deep thought that ranges into all kind of perspectives about life, you know, about women, men, you know, spirituality, culture, you know, what a jhana is and things like that you mentioned. it would have a very uplifting and awakening impact on our people.
Yes, it would.
Because lots of people that have read lots and lots of books, but on a daily basis are not getting these African deep revolutionary thoughts, I think we would have a tremendous awakening and growth with that. And I just want to praise you because
All right, Baba Thurman.
It bothers me, brother, you know, that not many of us realize the value that's in that book that
yes.
will help you direct you to all of those different sisters and brothers, ancestors, and the ones that still with us.
Rashe, well, I appreciate that, brother. Thank you once again for listening, Baba Thurman. Preach to you, my brother. Appreciate it very much.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And continue to listen. Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes.
Number six, we have tended to equate religion. Oh, I read that. Number seven, generally we have failed to study ourselves and to know our culture. That's the bottom line. Studying ourselves and to know our culture, not the culture that we have developed out of the denial of being a part of the European culture or this American culture, so-called American culture. I'm talking about our culture. And what we now must do, dear brothers and sisters, is we must develop our culture out of the best practices of us on the continent and throughout the diaspora. What are the best practices? What is the best thing for us as African people to do as we move forward as a people in a world that has been trained to despise us, to hate us, to denigrate us, to demean us? We have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in a mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. I ain't talking about your damn eyebrows or your shape or your nose. I'm telling you, don't leave that mirror till you like what you see, who you are historically, who you are culturally. The fact that you love who you are and you love those who look like you. You love them from light bright to damn near white to blue black. You love their hair, no matter if it's matted, kinked, locked, whatever. The shape of their nose, the thickness of their lips, the curve of their hips. You love it all because it's us. The challenges that African people face in America and throughout the world as we enter 21st century is to create programs, strategies, and institutions that will reclaim and preserve our rich culture. One such program that has emerged as one of the approaches for preserving our culture and traditions and at our youth is the growing Rites of Passage movement. This movement seeks to replace African and African people at the center of independently working with our young people. I love Rites of Passage. And what we need is a national and international Rites of Passage program that we all can get into. That is just like I've been asking ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, who are some of our greatest minds and greatest historians, to develop a curriculum just like on Sunday. On Sunday, yesterday was Sunday. Sunday around, I don't give a damn what time it was, but on Sunday at the Bible, at the Baptist church, they had a Sunday school lesson and everybody learned the same damn thing, whether they were in Atlanta, Richmond, Houston, New York, Chicago, whatever. The same thing. And that's what I propose, that on that day that we develop that independent program, that rites of passage program for men and women, for young kids, as well as for adults, because we need to, all of us need to learn. That's what we learn today. Next week we're learning this and the following this. Until finally we know who we are culturally, and we embrace that, and we were willing to work together. Children in rites of passage programs are generally taught aspects of our culture and our history that include our literary accomplishments, our accomplishments in music and science and technology, and the spiritual concepts of African people that direct our moral and ethical behavior and treatment of others. Understand, we are a people that love and have given love. We are a people who embrace. That's why when the European came down and when the European went everywhere else, he wasn't coming to love. He wasn't coming to share. He wasn't coming to help. He was coming to take, to eliminate if need be, with his selfish and greedy ass. As we look out and observe the African world community, we can see a common set of problems that all African people face as a result of hundreds of years of exploitation by Europeans and others against African people. This exploitation has developed into a worldwide system of European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. And this domination aimed at wiping out African culture. We must resist and refuse any efforts to wipe out our culture. Finally, Dr. Hilliard writes, culture surrender or culture destruction leads inevitably to the loss of any possibility for a group to mobilize on its behalf. There can be no African family in the absence of an African cultural base. We must establish what is good for us, all of us. And once that is established, we say, this is the cultural base. If you are outside of that, you got a problem. You better try to find ways to get inside of that, because to me, if any and anybody and everybody was outside of that, you out. Either you're in or you're out. We can't have all of this foolishness, all this plurality, all of this, I'm doing my thing, you do yours. No. Because of our unique situation and the fact that we have been targeted for elimination, targeted for destruction, we must say this is our cultural direction on the continent and any and everywhere else. That's why I've advocated many times to talk about using proper words. And when people talk about words have meaning, that's why I would love for us to say, instead of saying, and I know we use the word black synonymously with the word African. And if you ever heard me, you know that I always use Africa as a noun. As a noun, Africa is the noun, and there's a word that goes in front of it, which is the adjective that describes what that noun is. And so that's why you hear me say American African. If I talk about some brothers and sisters in Cuba, they're Cuban African, Brazilian African. Like my good brother Paul, he's a British, well, actually he's a Jamaican African, but he lives in Britain, so he's a British African. If he lived in France, he'd be a French African. Africa is the noun. Africa, what binds us. That we are African people regardless of where we are. And there's a distinct and important cultural continuity and unity within that. But I know that when we left other places, we gave up being African. We wanted to be French. We wanted to be German. We wanted to be English. We would accept those subservient positions just so we could be close to the cracker. Phew, man, don't... Oh, I'm glad I'm about to go off because I'm getting warmed up here. Dr. Conrad World, who's my good friend and brother, he's a professor emeritus at the Carruthers Center in Chicago, the Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies in Chicago. And, of course, you can email Conrad at c-world@neiu.edu. Or his website, drconradworld.com. Dr. Conrad World, W-O-R-R-I-L-L, W-O-R-R-I-L-L, Dr. Conrad. I'm going to get Conrad on this. I need to talk with him anyways. He's always good to talk with, and, you know, he's always up to something. He's just a beautiful brother. Brothers and sisters, I hope you enjoyed the program today. So as I try to cool down, because, man, I'm reading this, and I know that culture is vitally important for people. And I know that our culture has always been consistently under attack and been appropriated. And I know that when people talk about African culture, they're not talking about true African culture. They're talking about the responses to an alienation from the dominant culture and what happens with that. So when they talk about stuff that goes on in this inner city, so to speak, when they talk about the lack of us being supportive of one another, when they talk about all these things, it is not us. It is not true as African culture. It is us in a response that we've been denied any kind of existence within the dominant culture. And that's what it is. And that's what it will be, because it is theirs, not ours. It is theirs. But yet we keep holding out hope and begging and pleading and hoping and praying and boycotting and voting and all of this stuff to be a part of something that we can never wholly be a part of as an African people. We must get our own. And we must develop that, and we must do it now, because our future is not guaranteed. We're in a tough situation. Brothers and sisters, we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, I hope you have a blessed and wonderful day. Today is King Day. Whatever you do, remember about Dr. King as he began to develop and grow into the knowledge of himself and ourselves. I believe that. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia, be with us on Wednesday. I have my good brother, Brother Franklin Jones, and we'll talk about the African mind. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.